Have you ever been to a foreign country where you did not speak the language? You know, the stereotypical response, I think, when we don't speak the same language is that we talk louder and we talk slower as if that's going to help anything, right? I thought it was just Americans that did that with English, but I was in the Ukraine one time when there was this lady who was trying to tell me something, and she was saying it in Ukrainian, Russian, whatever. And I tried to explain to her that I did not speak Ukrainian, I did not speak Russian, and so she kept saying it slower and louder. Это круто, спасибо, американцы. Это круто, спасибо, американцы. It's not helping, okay? I don't understand what you're talking about. I was cussed out by a lady one time in Italy, and at least I'm assuming that's what was happening because I didn't understand any of the words, but we were out in front of an elevator. I have no idea what made her mad, but I'm just telling you, you haven't been cussed out till you've been cussed out in Italian. I mean, it was fluent, okay, whatever it was she was saying. But language barriers can make it really hard to communicate. And that kind of raises the question of, okay, where did all these different languages come from? We know that there are a few core languages, and then over 6,000 other languages that have evolved from those early ones. But as we talked about Noah and his family last week, if they were the only human beings on the ark, that means Noah, his three sons, and their wives were the ancestors of all human beings. And presumably, all eight of them spoke the same language, right? So why don't we still all speak the same language, or at least some variation of it? Well, I'm going to show you. And what I want to do is I want to read the whole story to you first, and then we will unpack it a little bit at a time. And I think the application today might come as a bit of a surprise to you, that this is a fascinating story, but we learn some key principles here about life, about human beings, about our faith, even about the church from what happened in Babylonia so long ago. This is from Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. Just kind of listen as I read this first. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As men moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and they settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. And then they said, come, let's build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. And the Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Now let's be honest, that's a pretty bizarre story. People who one day could communicate and the next day they couldn't. Kind of sounds like Congress, doesn't it? Or maybe marriage, you know, maybe trying to parent teenagers. One day you communicate, the next day you can't communicate, you know. Well, this account of the Tower of Babel, I think, raises some perplexing questions. And many of those questions I can't understand. You know, some parts of the Bible we take by faith because we have come to know God and we've come to trust that His Word is true. But this account begins with the incredible potential that God placed in human beings. Remember what it says in Genesis 1:27. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. We were created in the image of God. And you think about it. What is it that makes human beings different from the animals? Well, it's the very qualities that God Himself has. Creativity. Language. The ability to reason. The desire to excel. God put qualities like that in us as humans. We aren't gods and goddesses, but we do share traits with God Himself. Listen again to Genesis 11:5. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. And the Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they've begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Even without God's direction, even without God's blessing, these men and women were carrying out an incredible project. you think about the unity that they must have had. It says they were one people, they spoke one language. Now, maybe you're thinking, who are all these people? I mean, where did they come from? Last week, we closed out with Noah, his three sons, and their wives. Eight people is all that's left on earth. Now, two chapters later in the Bible, and we've got all these people who are talking about building a city, building a tower together. Well, just like the first descendants of Adam and Eve, the first generation of people after the flood, and as these generations progressed, they had to marry close relatives at first until things kind of spread out. Cousins at least, right? Remember Jeff Foxworthy when he would do the you might be a redneck stuff? If your dad walks you to school because he's in your class, you know, you might be a redneck. If you ever had to climb to the top of a water tower with a bucket of paint to defend your sister's honor, you might be a redneck. Well, how about this one? If you go to a family reunion to pick up women, you might be a redneck, right? And that's kind of what's going on here, right? From Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and from their wives came these vast numbers of people. And they did all speak the same language. And they did have this incredible unity with one another. There is power in unity, this ability to seek a common goal and work together. In the wedding ceremony that I often use, the author wrote, "Together we can become what we could never be separately." Together we become what we could never be separately. The book of Ecclesiastes says that two are better than one because they help each other, they protect each other, they can even keep each other warm, and their working together allows them to accomplish more. God created us to live in community. He created us to work together, to accomplish more together. There's synergy that comes when we share our resources, our talents, and abilities. I'm going to give you a name, and then I just want you to kind of think about who the partner is, the sidekick, the teammate. You can just kind of shout it out. Okay, some of these are going to be older, some maybe a little newer. But all right, Lone Ranger, Tonto, exactly, okay? Rogers and Hammerstein, right? Big movie soundtrack kind of people. Abbott and Costello. Fred Flintstone. Barney, last name. Rubble, okay. Helen Keller. Anybody know? Ann Sullivan was the one who broke through and was able to teach her. Woody had Buzz, nice, Buzz Lightyear. Laverne and Shirley. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, well done, okay. Han Solo and Chewbacca was kind of his partner in crime, right? Anyway, okay, all right. Together we become what we could never be separately. None of those people could have been who they were without somebody coming alongside them. We were created to work that way. Together we become what we could never be separately. Here's the deal. Even without God's blessing, in Genesis 11, Moses explains to us that nothing was impossible for these people. They had unity, and they had a clear vision, didn't they? Let's make bricks. Let's build a city. Let's create a tower. Let's make a name for ourselves. The tower will be kind of a rallying point. It's going to be a place to gather. And it makes sense. Remember the Eiffel Tower at Kings Island? You go there with the kids. You say, now, if we get separated, let's meet at the tower. Because you know, everywhere you look, you know, everywhere you are, you can see the tower. This tower was going to pull them together. And these people following the flood, man, they had a great goal. And they created this big plan. And they set out to make it work. And you think about it. Their great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, however far back, built a boat that was bigger than 1.5 football fields. These people come from building stock. You know, these are people who build things. And they had this desire to build. But what did God say? With unity and with vision, nothing was impossible for them. And the other thing I think that gave them a tremendous potential was hard work. I heard about a manager who was talking to an applicant. He said, I'm sorry, we can't hire you. We just don't have enough work to keep you busy. And he said, you'd be surprised how little it takes. You know what? These men and women on the plain of Shinar, man, they were not afraid of hard work. There was a spirit of cooperation. They had a clear sense of purpose. They were building this city. They were building this tower that was going to reach to the heavens. even without God's blessing, because they had unity, they had vision, and they had hard work, I'm telling you, the sky was the limit for them. Back in 1909, a man named Daniel Burnham laid out the plans for the modern city of Chicago. His plan was to help beautify the city and then improve the efficiency of its commerce. Everything from green space to highways to railroads to how wide the individual roads were going to be, he was setting Chicago up to be the largest city in America between the coasts. And his famous quote about his famous design was, "Make no small plans, they have no power to stir men's blood." Or maybe you've heard it, to stir men's souls. Daniel Burnham would have loved the Tower of Babel. Pastor Ray Pritchard imagined a conversation between Burnham and the people of that time. "Oh, you want a tower that reaches to the heavens? That's a great idea. Let's use bricks instead of stone. It'll last forever that way. I'll call the bank. I can arrange the financing. We'll borrow most of the money at prime plus 1%. The city council will float us a bond issue for the rest. We're going to rent out the lower floors for retail. We'll put families in the middle, and we'll save the upper floors for multinational companies that will want prime office space." This was all a great idea. He says, "We'll be the envy of every city in Mesopotamia." And it was a big, blood-stirring, exciting plan. Only God nixed their project before it even got completed. Why? Why? Because their plan demonstrated a defiance of mankind against God. There was a defiance against God. At first glance, it kind of looks like, well, what could they possibly have done wrong? This sounds like a great idea. As a united group, they gathered in an area that was conducive to habitation, and they began this building project. The earliest signs of civilization have been found in this area of the Tigris-Euphrates Basin. It's where ancient Babylon was built. It's Iraq today. And there in this open plain, they started making these kiln-baked stone bricks so that they could build. And archaeologists have actually discovered that stair-stepped pyramids called ziggurats were very common in this area. They really did not have a use except they were seen as a stairway for the gods. And so this must have been quite a structure, this tower that was going up on the plain of Shinar. But the problem was their potential was misdirected. They defiantly chose their own agenda instead of carrying out the will of God. Take another look at verse 4 here of chapter 11. They said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth." We want to make a name for ourselves. All this kind of begins with the sin of pride. This city, this tower, it was not about improving or helping mankind. These people wanted a name for themselves. They wanted to demonstrate how impressive they were. They wanted future generations to look back with reverence and respect for their great accomplishments. And as a side note, when it says they wanted to reach the heavens, now we could assume that it just means they wanted to get up among the clouds, but there's probably a sense here in which they were wanting to build this tower so they could reach up to God. They wanted to make their own way to heaven. And that's not going to happen. We know that's not going to happen. But that's what they were hoping to do. And now understand, there is nothing wrong with big goals. There's nothing wrong with lofty dreams. Nothing wrong with wanting to leave a legacy for the future. Certainly nothing wrong with wanting to connect with God. But these people were totally focused on themselves, what they could accomplish, what they could build, what they could be known for, even what they could do to come face to face with the divine. Friends, God promises that one day the humble will be exalted and one day the proud will be brought low. When self-promotion becomes the goal of our existence, it's only a matter of time before we're brought down. And let's face it, this sin of pride is really nothing new. The old saying is that prostitution is the oldest profession, right? Well, the oldest sin is pride. It goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden when Satan whispered to Eve, "You shall be like God." And that sounded pretty good to her. What did God tell Noah and his family to do back in Genesis 9:7. He said, as for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it. God wanted the people to spread out. He wanted them to multiply. He wanted to cover the earth. But what did the people decide to do in chapter 11, verse 4? Let's build a city. Let's build a tower so that we will not be scattered. I mean, this tower was a direct act of disobedience. God said go, but they didn't want to go. God said spread out over all the earth, but they wanted to stay home. We'll just make our own rules. We'll do things our way. We will set a course for our own future. When people say there's nothing new under the sun, this is the kind of thing that we mean. Sure, there's new inventions. Sure, there are new discoveries. We create new ways to travel. We find new ways to communicate. But the reality is defiance toward God is nothing new. It's been going on since the very beginning. This refusal to do things God's way goes all the way back. I think we could even argue that the Tower of Babel shows a lack of trust. Why did these people want to stay put? Why did they refuse to spread out over all the earth? Well, it's always easier to stay with what's familiar than it is to step out in faith. It's easier to maintain the status quo than it is to kind of take strides, to move forward, to advance, to strike out for places unknown. Why do we remember names like Christopher Columbus, Marco Polo, Magellan, Balboa? That's Vasco Balboa, not Rocky Balboa. There's Ponce de Leon, there's Lewis and Clark, there's Ernest Shackleton. The list goes on and on. Why do we remember these great explorers? It's because they had the guts or the drive or just enough crazy in them to set out and explore places that their contemporaries never would have dreamed of going. The people of the Tower of Babel, they didn't want to go. They didn't want to explore. They didn't want to see the world. They didn't want to obey God. They just wanted to stay right there where it was safe and where it was comfortable. They did not trust God enough to do what he said to do. Now, the first century historian Josephus speculated that the people were trying to build a tower so it would be so high that if the world ever flooded again, they could get higher than God could send water. Now, if that's true, that's still further lack of trust because God made a promise, right, that he would never flood the entire world again. Were these people willing to believe what God had clearly said? Look, God gave them so many gifts. He gave them creativity, community. He gave them diligence. And with their unity, with their vision, with their hard work, they were kind of poised for success. But the problem was there was pride and there was disobedience and there was this lack of trust. This defiant attitude ruined their opportunity for impact. So what did God do? Well, look one more time at verse 7. Come, God said, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth and they stopped building the city. God told them to scatter. They refused to scatter, so he scattered them. Just think, if this had not happened, if the people had spread out at the beginning like he told them to, we might be able to go anywhere in the world and have conversations with people in the same language. But that was not the case. If you've ever been to a foreign country and there's other language being spoken around you that you don't know, it just kind of becomes white noise after a while. It just blends into the background. You can't comprehend anything. In those situations, if you suddenly overhear somebody speaking in English, you are instantly drawn to that person. When nobody else is speaking your language and suddenly you hear somebody speaking a language you understand, everything suddenly makes sense. It's like you're being reunited with your best friend. Man, you just want to talk to that person and have conversation with them. Well, imagine what it must have been like at the Tower of Babel when people showed up for work the next day and God had instantly created these language barriers. Suddenly the foreman couldn't tell the bricklayers what to do and the architect couldn't tell the builders what to do and the mortar crew couldn't tell the boys who were delivering supplies where to put all the surplus materials. Everything broke down. The operation came to a grinding halt. It's no wonder that people went back and began to gather together in groups with people they could communicate with. Everybody's freaking out. The world's gone crazy. Everybody's gibbering except, oh, here's my family. Let me get back together with them. Joseph Free wrote a book, Archaeology and Bible History, and he relates that back in the 1850s, the city of Nineveh was excavated. And these ancient Babylonian clay tablets were discovered that told not only of a great flood. This is not Jewish, okay? These are not kind of the people of God. But they talked about a great flood. They also, on these tablets, recorded the destruction of a particular Mesopotamian ziggurat tower. And George Smith from the British Museum translated these tablets. And in the tablets it said, "The building of this temple offended the gods. And one night they threw down what had been built. They scattered them abroad. And listen, they made strange their speech." The gods of Babylon, that was their interpretation of this, made strange their speech. God divided the languages of the Tower of Babel. Now, he certainly didn't create every known language that we have in the world today. He divided things into several language groups. We don't know how many. And then over these millenniums since that time, basic divisions of language have kind of morphed into the numerous languages that we have now, thousands of languages in the world today. Even the same language spoken in different areas sounds different, right? I mean, we've all experienced that. English in London, England sounds different than English in London, Kentucky, okay? Even Boston, Massachusetts to Boston, Kentucky, it just sounds different. But a casual observer can realize, especially when it comes to written language, that there are at least three broad styles of language. There are what are the Indo-European languages. That's things like English, Dutch, German, lots of similar root words, and we read left to right. Asian languages, Japanese, Chinese, and others, use symbols to create words. Hebrew and Arabic languages have distinct characters, and they read right to left, just the opposite of what we do. When I was a student at Cincinnati Bible College, one of my really close friends was from Egypt. And we were in chapel together one day, and he had his Arabic Bible with him. So I picked up his Arabic Bible. I said, "I can read this, you know, I can all cool." And I opened up to the front, and I said, "This says, 'In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.'" And he laughed at me and said, "No." He turned to the back of the book. He said, "This says, 'In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.'" I was in Revelation, thought I was in Genesis. They read just the opposite of what we do. There are categories of languages today that have nothing in common. And people who believe in evolution claim that language kind of evolved from animal grunts and human noises, which kind of became increasingly more sophisticated over millions of years. But what they're baffled about is that language cannot be traced back to one root language. It's because God created the separation. Why? Because humans were disobeying him, and he wanted to push them, to nudge them, to obey, to spread out over all the world. The Apostle Paul said in Acts 17:26, "From one man God made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live." So this account of the Tower of Babel offers what I think is a fascinating look at man's stubborn determination to rebel against God, and it shows God's willingness to kind of push people to obey him. The fact is, God's a lot more concerned about our obedience than our comfort, so he made people uncomfortable to get them to obey. But here's the challenge in this. As I was writing this sermon, every sermon should have a "so what, who cares, what does this mean for me" moment. Right? You ought to be able to back me into a corner, metaphorically speaking, and say, "Okay, why does this matter? Why are you taking all the time to tell us this? What does this mean?" And here's what I think. When God came to investigate what the people were up to on the plain of Shinar, he saw their unity, he saw their vision, he saw their hard work. He heard them communicating with one another. He listened as they shared their hopes and dreams and plans. And he said this in verse 6, "If as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them." Don't miss this. Unity, vision, and hard work without God's blessing. And if left to themselves, he said, nothing would be impossible for them. They can accomplish anything. And you think about it. Why are so many people in the world today, who are far from God, people who have no interest in the will of God, and they have made such great advances in science, in art, in literature, in medicine, in technology. It's because human beings were created in the image of God. He's given us this tremendous capacity for advancement. So much is possible even without the blessing of God. So just imagine, man, this is it. Just imagine. Imagine if we could take that same unity, we could take that same vision, we could take that same hard work, and we add into that the blessing of God. Imagine what God could do with that. There is no telling what might happen. Imagine in the church, with unity, with vision, with hard work, and with God's blessing. Imagine the people that we could reach, and the bridges that we could build, and the families that we could help, and the needs that we could meet, and the lives that we could touch, and all the many people that we could serve. Just imagine what we could do with the unity, and with the vision, and with the hard work, and with the blessing of God. Here's my bottom line today. It's a mathematical equation, okay? Our potential plus God's power equals lasting impact. This tremendous potential that God put in us, coupled with the power and blessing that can come from Him, lasting impact. Listen to these verses. They're not going to be on the screen. I just want you to listen to them. From Romans 8:31, if God is for us, who can be against us? If God is for us, if He is with us, what can come against us? The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 3:20, to Him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or all that we imagine through Jesus Christ, to Him be glory in the church for all generations. Jesus said in Matthew 19:26, with God, all things are possible. With God, all things are possible. Can you imagine? And the fact is, no, you can't imagine, and neither can I, because Paul says that God does more than we can even imagine. And I don't know about you, but I've got a great imagination. I've got a vivid imagination. There's lots of things I can imagine, and yet it says that more than we can imagine, God can do through His power at work in us. Unity, vision, hard work, and the blessing of God. Our potential plus God's power equals lasting impact. A couple of weeks ago, I drove over to Springfield to visit the old St. Catherine College. And man, it is just a beautiful campus. It was just heartbreaking. I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when the college shut down, it's just been sitting there empty. But now, it's the Crown Recovery Center. It's a facility for those facing alcohol and drug addiction. Crown is part of a larger organization called ARC, Addiction Recovery Care. There are about 30 ARC facilities all across the state. Now, Crown Recovery Center, actually all the ARC facilities, are similar to Isaiah House. I'm more familiar with that personally. These campuses are Christ-centered, like Isaiah House. They offer not only detox and kind of crisis response and intervention, but they have inpatient care, they have outpatient care, they teach life skills, they provide job training, they offer a year-long program, residential, for both men and women to find a new life of sobriety, and then with the help of Christ to be able to go out and start new lives. And Tim Robinson is the founder and CEO of ARC. And here's his story in his own words. I'm just reading his quote now. I started drinking in my first year of law school at the University of Kentucky to cope with my mom passing away during my finals week. For the next 8 years, I almost drank myself to death. He said, 15 years ago, while I was a prosecuting attorney in Lawrence County, Kentucky, a court bailiff who was a recovering alcoholic and a pastor led me to Christ. He became my sponsor and he became my pastor. He said, addiction recovery is personal to me because I'm a survivor. Now, over the next couple of years, Tim resigned as prosecutor. He did it in 2008. In 2010, he opened a residential addiction recovery center for women in eastern Kentucky. It had 16 beds. That was 11 years ago. Here we are 11 years later. There are 450 men in recovery at St. Catherine College, just on that campus alone, plus 30 women in a separate building there on the campus. And that's just one campus of 30 campuses around the state. Tim Robinson is the real deal. I'm telling you, he impressed me so much. He is smart. He is driven. He's a hard worker. And he has built this team of both professionals who are paid and then these devoted volunteers who are doing far more than anybody ever dreamed was possible. Certainly far more than he ever dreamed was possible when he started one facility with 16 beds 11 years ago. But God is doing this big thing, this great big thing, because of unity and because of vision and because of hard work and because of the blessing of God. Friends, I'm telling you, our potential that God gave us, plus his blessing and power in our lives, that's what brings lasting impact. Let's pray. Father, we read in Scripture these stories, and sometimes they feel so far removed from us, so long ago. And we even wonder if they have anything to do with life today. But we read this account of the Tower of Babel, and we read this tremendous potential that you put into human beings, this ability to plan and to build and to create, working together, speaking the same language. So much potential, and yet, as often is the case, people lived in defiance against you. And so, God, may we learn some positive lessons from their negative example. If we are united together as one, if we share a common vision, and if we're willing to work hard with your power, Lord, at work in us, you can do, you will do more than we can ever even dream or imagine. Give us the courage, the faith, and the work ethic to be able to stand firm, to move forward together, and to make a difference for you in this community. That's our prayer. In Jesus' name, amen.